Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
I'm sorry for you.
Hello, hello, hello.
Kusho, kusho, kusho.
How's it going, Babelito?
Ay, aquí triste en una casa casi abandonada. So if you hear a little bit more of echo, it's because there's nothing on the walls. I just took your painting to the office yesterday. So it's tapelona, güey. But I'm good.
Wow.
How are you?
Pelonete. Me, I'm good. I just got to my studio and I'm busier than ever. By the way, we're recording these episodes ahead of time. It is I don't even know what day it is, girl. July 27th. Because, you know, we try to bring you episodes every week because somehow we are still in quarantine. I mean, people that give a shit about other people in the world are still in quarantine. Let me rephrase that, because I see you hoes on Instagram going out, taking little trips here and there. Like, it's okay. Yes, and I am talking to you, all you fucking gays. I saw you at Fire Island. I see you in Palm Springs.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Okay. Be careful, because a lot of people die.
Shout out to my sister who tested negative. Thank God.
And then she threw a big carne asada and invitó toda la chusma.
No, girl. She has to work for fucking a big pharmacy. So, yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's so scary to be, like, in a hospital or a pharmacy where people are infected or feel the symptoms, you know? I feel for them, so shout out to all the medical professionals. Shout out to my primo Pablo, who's like in the COVID unit at one of the local hospitals here.
Hijo y'all, su madre.
It's serious, y'all. He looks like a damn stormtrooper every day just to go into the hospital, okay? Like, this is serious.
Como pinche astronauta, güey.
Goddamn bootleg, looking like a mix between a beekeeper and a stormtrooper. Looking like I don't know many Star Wars references because I've never seen it, but you know what I was thinking, Babelito?
What?
I think for our Patreon or for something, we should watch things like on Zoom together so people can watch along with us.
I will do Star Wars because I've just never seen it.
Me neither. But there's already people that do that kind of shit. But you know what we should really watch and react to?
What?
Do you have access to Disney Plus?
I think I do through somebody.
Bitch, what if we watched Hamilton together for the first time and reacted to it?
Okay.
Imagine! Imagine?
You know, it's so funny because I was telling my husband, I was like, you know what? I feel like I just need to fucking watch it.
Me too.
And then I started looking at pictures and I was like, nope, never mind.
But what if we make it?
But I will do it for the podcast.
Yeah, let's make it bonus content. And like, I know that Maite hates musicals too. And like, we can have like maybe CYC and us can watch it together.
Ay, imagínate, güey.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be fun.
So we'll be like, okay, everybody, push play right now. And we all watch and react to it. And I know that I've talked so much shit about Hamilton, but I have a feeling
that
I'm
going to
be all crying by the end of it. Like,
anyway, go ahead.
Oh, we should do it. We should do it.
I'm totally
down. I've been dreading it, though, dude, because I've had my roommates have Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So it like pops up and I'm like, oh, no, I'm just going to keep watching Survivor. You know, mindless shit, problematic shit. Yeah, that show is so bad. But anyway, Latinos Who Lunch. Hi, everybody.
Hi,
everybody's.
¿Qué comiste hoy?
I hope everybody's doing great. Well, you know, my routine, I'm trying to get a routine going. So I'm trying to get up early. That's not happening, but I'm trying to get up early. Like,
it's the quarantine, man. Like, waking up early is harder than fucking ever. I don't know what it is. It's so crazy.
I try to get up around 9 and then it doesn't, I usually am like in bed till like 9:30, get up, get ready, and then I try to be at my studio 11. So I'm trying to work like 11 to 7 in my studio, which has been really nice because, you know, a lot of people that are listening are artists and have home studios. And when you live and work in the same place, for me, a person that is a procrastinator to the max, has a very short attention span, it's really hard because when I'm home, I'm like, let me start propagating these succulents right now. Oh, you know what? Oh my God, I'm going to make some tea, some sun tea right now. Oh, you know what? I'm going to just take an hour and organize the garage. And then, okay, then I'm going to get to the emails. And then I that's been the last 2 weeks for me, bitch. Like, I feel like I'm just like in this cycle of tidying up, like, and it's like, it's not sparking any fucking joy. So I'm trying to do that with food now. Like, okay, if I prep things, then it makes things a lot easier and faster. So I've been prepping my lunch at night to bring it to the studio. And in the morning, I'm just trying to do some oatmeal with fruit and, like, you know, simple shit. Not right. too heavy. Because, like, we talked about last episode, like, I'm not a breakfast person. It's, like, it's not my thing. Like, I don't know. It's too much. You just woke up, you know? Like, drink some water.
Yeah, breakfast, big breakfast should be lunch. That's what it should be.
Yeah. And I know that it's, like, because of my sedentary lifestyle. Because if I was, like, a farmer, I would need food in the morning, you know? But I'm not sedentary. No estoy en un pinche rancho. Yeah, bitch, sedentary. How many steps do you take a day? If you take less than 3,000 steps a day, my goal now, because you know the goal is 10,000. My goal is now, like, I can't. If you only walk 1,000 to 2,000 steps a day, you live a sedentary lifestyle. That means you get up, you walk around a little bit, you drive to work, your work, and an office, and then you go back home. You know, maybe you go to the store. Maybe you walk 2,000 steps. That's it.
That's the beauty and struggle with living in Chicago, man. Because when it's beautiful, we go for like 1 hour walks. But when it's not beautiful, it's not beautiful. It fucking sucks. But right now, it's like everything's blooming. So I think I am accomplishing that, but I don't know.
Yeah. So I'm trying to have more than 3,000 steps a day, at least. I'm trying to get to 10,000 a day, but who has the time? And so... You know what I started doing when I edit my podcast? I hold my computer with one hand in my studio and I'm editing with the other hand, like holding it up while I'm standing. And then I just walk in a circle while I'm editing to get my steps in. Because usually I would just be sitting there for hours. Sometimes it takes me like 4 hours to edit an episode. And I'm like, oh, I could be walking. But, you know, my broke ass isn't going to buy a fucking treadmill to edit my podcast and walk at the same time. Right. So, you know, I'm using God's treadmill, my feet.
Just don't get a Fitbit. Shout out to Kirsten because she's out. Before she got a treadmill, the Fitbit will be like, oh, it's time to get up. Like, so shady. Like, fucking get up. You know, you got to start working. So
it's so interesting, people that buy Fitbits. I'm like, don't you have a phone? It has the same shit on it. I don't know.
Or Pokemon.
But I guess it takes your pulse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, yeah. So, Today, oatmeals. Today, oatmeal with almond milk. Okay, vegan. And blueberries. Because you know there was a sale on blueberries and I got some.
Okay.
Antioxidants, honey. Okay. How about you?
Samesies, but I had it with half and half.
Wow, mira, you're really... He's like, okay, this year is the year. I am going to get gout. This is it. Everything actually has to have the maximum amount of richness and fat.
Speaking of gout, blueberries is really good for gout, actually. So
you know that?
Because... Okay, the story is boring, but I remember I was working at a ceramic store in, ¿cómo se llama? Rodeo Drive for like 2-3 weeks. And the manager there This was like 15 years ago. He just
Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, bitch. Hay un hotel ahí.
You really have always wanted to be a white woman. I love this for you.
You know what the funniest part is, that the person I work with, this like badass Chicana who's like, who had all these fucking stories about marching in the 60s and shit. It was actually pretty cool. But anyway, but the manager there, they got diagnosed with gout that week, and then they said that the doctor told them that blueberries were really good for that. So I was like, well, wow. Okay. Y nunca se me olvidó. But yeah, I had it with water and half and half because I didn't have milk. Con simenem y con pasas. Y con plátano. Es que ya no tengo nada en la casa, güey. Te digo que todo está bien pelón, like.
You're moving. So you're moving from Chicago and going to make your way down to Joshua Tree so you can fully turn into a white witch. I'm loving this story for you.
Yes.
How's it going right now with your move?
It's because we don't want to spend money in, like, a truck and everything. We're moving everything in our car, so we've been doing so many different trips, and we do little by little. And it's also good for me because ya estoy viejito and my wrists are acting out.
Wait, you're taking multiple trips?
Because we got a storage.
In Chicago. Okay, yes. I'm like, girl, what? You're going to take multiple trips from Chicago to
California?
You are really going to get your kicks on Route 66, bitch, because you're going to be kicking yourself after the hundreds of dollars you spend on gas.
No, precisamente because we want to save. But it's almost empty, but as I'm wrapping up everything here in Chicago, I have to finish all my commissions, my writing commissions, so I can actually enjoy myself. Because we're going to take our time and we're going to stop by Monument Valley and shit, which I don't know, like, as excited as I am, I'm also like, fuck, like, traveling right now is like the worst fucking timing. But, you know, like, we got to do what we got to do. So it's coming along. It's just, it's weird, man. Like, I curated. This is the first time that I actually curated an apartment. Like, put all of my friends' art on the wall. And that was always nice. Like, every single time coming to home, like, that was super nice. And
yeah.
No sé, güey. Todas las paredes pelonas. It freaks me out. But we're almost there. We'll start to get on the road by Friday. But, you know, I just finished writing. I don't know if it's gonna go through this publication. I was asked to submit, but I don't know, dude. This is the best piece of writing I've ever done in my fucking life, and I am so proud of it. Y si pega el chicle, this is the beginning of like a new methodology, you know, and like that can be huge. So I'm very, very hopeful.
Can you give us a taste of what you're talking about? Or?
Yes. Because I'm really excited about this article.
Because you just talk about it in abstract for the past 6 months. So I don't know what you're talking about. So
I wrote an article. It's called The Mexican Pictures. And I'm not going to bore you with the details. But generally speaking, pendeja, it is about travelers artists. So right before the independence of the movements of independence started in 1810 in Latin America, the Spanish government decided to allow a couple of quote-unquote scientists and travelers to come to Mexico, to come to the Americas or New Spain, the different viceroyalties, to survey it, because Spain always felt like the other in relation to Europe and to France and to other big, you know, European countries. So they sent this Prussian person. His name is Alexander von Humboldt. And we talked a little bit about him in the last episode on monuments. And von Humboldt just traveled everywhere in South America. He scientifically, quote unquote, explore a lot of areas, measuring volcanoes. And needless to say, there's like statues and libraries and cities and parks named after him because of all the scientific, again, quote unquote, exploration. But when you read his personal writings and when you look at the images accompanying those writings, they're fucked up. indigenous people are only used for the regional knowledge of the land, and they're never taken into consideration. So they're always tiny, 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 tiny little people in these images. And I developed this whole entire thing of how, after Von Humboldt, images of what they called back then the picturesque were basically a reiteration of how racist Mexicans are, right? So the Mexicans use the same formula as the Europeans to do the same type of landscapes, which you see in Velasco, you see Casimiro Castro and others. And to emphasize ideas of the nation. So how is it that all this, you know, like mestizos use indigenous legacies, but at the same time, the reality of indigenous people is really bad, especially in the 19th century. So I'm tackling all those dichotomies and all those fucking problems and the positive things about some of these landscape artists and the negative things about these landscape artists. It ended up being, what, like 13,000 words. And me lo eché, güey, me lo eché en un mes. I mean, I started thinking about this idea since last year. And I put together a paper for a panel in February. And then finally, it all came together. Like, I'm turning it in as soon as we finish recording today. So awesome. I'm really fucking excited, yeah. But I cool. I do want to come back to the, maybe later in the year, I do want to come back to the topic of travelers, because the way that they establish of how to travel and how to explore and how to go off to the beaten path and all that shit that everybody's exploiting in Instagram, not right now, but apparently according to you, some people are. It's something that we still continue to do.
Some
today,
people,
right?
Most people.
Motherfuckers, oh my God. Yeah. So the ways in which we, quote unquote, become tourists when we come to other places, especially those considered, again, problematic, exotic places, that those rules, those ideas, the way to understand the land today comes from these fucking assholes, comes from Von Humboldt and comes from Catherwood and Neville and all of those people. So it will be interesting to talk about trends in social media, such as taking pictures in front of Machu Picchu and putting it on Tinder. You know, like that shows you that you are an explorer. You have the guts to go to Latin America. But at the same time, we don't realize that we're just recreating the same violences, you know, that have been mm-hmm. around for like 200 years. So I don't know. I think a whole exploration of that, of traveling, will be a cool episode. But anyway, we'll talk about it later. So that's what I wrote about. And now I'm writing about La Malinche, man, but that will be another episode.
But cool. Maybe we'll have this production meeting off air. Okay, so let's get into the podcast. We have some listener letters today, and so we're going to take a quick break and be right back. OMG, Babelito. I am so excited about the Latinos Who Lunch ABCs of Latinidad coloring book. Have you colored yours yet?
Oh my God, girl. I have my copy that is clister clear.
Para que
se quede para el recuerdo. And then I have the one that I'm working on. I started with Barroquismo because you know me. Yeah. But yes, it's so fucking beautiful. As I mentioned before, you have to get several copies because there's so many things you can do with it. You guys did a beautiful job.
Thank you. If you would like your own copy of the ABCs of Latinidad based on episode 99 of Latinos Who Lunch, you can get the coloring book today at latinoswholunch.com/coloring book, now sold exclusively through our dear friends here in Las Vegas at the Writer's Block, a local bookstore. We are loving the collaboration. I'm so happy to be there because it's one of the coolest places. Support local businesses, people, especialmente right now in these times when you can really make a statement by spending money with businesses and people that actually give a shit about us. Okay. So again, latinoswholunch.com/coloring book.
Did it, did it, did it, did it.
And we're back. Okay. Please send your emails to asklwlpod@gmail.com and we might read them on a future episode like today. Also, feel free to send us voice memos. You can call at 512-333-0471. And if you want to leave a voicemail, we might play it on the show too. Okay. Do you want to ask the first question, Babs, or should I?
Go for it.
Okay. Our first one is from Mari or Maury or Maudi, maybe?
Maybe.
It's spelled like Maury Povich, and people say his name wrong all the time or differently. Did I tell you I've been to the Maury? Yeah, I told you I've been to the Maury Povich show several times for live tapings. That's in the past. Okay. All right. So here we go. Our dear friend Mari says, you ask for questions, here they are. Okay, so this person sent us a lot of questions. So I'm actually going to start breaking them up and asking sections of her email in future listener letters, because all of her questions are fire. So she goes, your lunch buddy favorita is back. Thank you for reading my letter. It made a rough day a great one. I had so much fun, including all those LWL references. Qué risa. You asked for fun listener questions, so here they are. I hope you and the listeners enjoy them. I had a blast writing these questions and titles. Thanks again. With love from Tokyo, Maori. P.S. Hey, Maite, I know you help with Latinos Who Lunch, so if you're reading this, love CYC. I had to embarrass Maite. Okay. So, we have two categories that I chose. The category is favoritas, what makes me say aleluya, amen, and fotos y recuerdos. Okay, so first, we're going to do favoritas. Okay, Babalito, what is your favorite book?
Silences of History by Michael Rolfe Trillo.
Okay, mine... I think the one that has affected me the most recently and that I'm going to reread is probably Hunger by Roxane Gay.
Mm.
Okay. Movie. What's your favorite movie?
Nazarín by Luis Buñuel.
What is it about? Really quick.
It's about...
One sentence.
Es como se llama un... It's like a Franciscan, basically. It's like a monk that is traveling around Mexico and he just makes fun of the whole entire institution. So fucking good.
Oh my God, what's my favorite movie? This is hard. I don't know. Oh my God. This is really hard for me to pick. Oh no. Oh no. I got to think of my childhood. I think of things that I would watch over and over and over and over and over again. Oh no. What is my favorite movie? My brothers and I watch Friday all the time. I think Friday is my favorite movie.
Oh, okay. That's nice. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So what's your favorite TV show?
Avatar The Last Airbender before everybody got into it. I mean, I'm still into it. It's so good.
Yeah. It was only cool before everybody knew about it. You're
exactly.
Right. Okay. my favorite TV show. Oh my gosh. This is hard. What do you think it is? What do I talk about the most?
El Show de Xuxa. I'm just kidding.
Ah, sí. You know what? Siempre en domingo. Next. No, just kidding.
RuPaul.
I know. Even though it's a fucked up show. Girl.
Shout out to Shea Coulee. I just read that she won. That's amazing.
Oh my God. How academic of you. So, I didn't watch the show, but I read that she won.
I know.
And from what I read, she looked fabulous. So, that season of All Stars was the best. Jujubee, oh, what a dream.
Spelunking. I will never forget that fucking reading. Never.
Oh, that's so funny. You know that there is now, okay, so there's Drag Race US, there's Drag Race UK, there's Drag Race Thailand. There's Drag Race South America, which is called Drag Race The Switch.
Sácatelas.
And then now there's Drag Race Canada. So there's five franchises. And now there was just announced that Drag Race Holland, or like the Netherlands is coming next.
And so, Dios.
That's already 6 franchises. And so, not including All Stars, or I don't know. And you better believe that I've seen all of UK, all of US, and all of Canada so far. And somebody just gave me their WoW Presents Plus password. So I'm going to start Drag Race Thailand soon.
Oh, my God.
I'm obsessed with it, yeah. But it's become unfortunately, you know, when we first started this podcast, it was like, we love you, RuPaul. And now it's like a guilty pleasure because he's awful.
Because he was subversive almost. Like, almost watching almost. It was like a political statement almost. But
you know
no
what?
More.
You know what gives me hope is like watching Drag Race Canada and because RuPaul's not on it,
mm-hmm.
And how much more progressive it is. They had a pit crew member on the last episode that wasn't like, didn't have a six pack, you know, like just was like.
Oh, that's refreshing, yeah.
He just had like loose skin hanging out. And I'm like, oh my God, this is, and he's beautiful. He's a beautiful man. And I was like, what? This is great. And there was several Asian pit crew members. Like, there's only one on RuPaul's Drag Race. You know what I mean? In the history of the 12 seasons of the show, you know? So, anyway. Oh, all right. But, you know, RuPaul is a baby boomer. Speaking of, who is your favorite drag queen?
I was thinking about it because I do have Alisa Edwards, and that was...
Come always. On, Alisa.
Always. But you know what? Every time I heard the word drag queen, I think of Shangela. Like, that's the first thing that pops in my head. So when I think of that, the embodiment of drag queen, I think of Shangela. And I think of her in that sequence dress where she crowned the party that we went to. Ya se me olvidó who she crowned.
She crowned Bianca Del Rio.
Yes, when she crowned Bianca Del Rio. That's what I think. I think about that moment when she walked on stage. So I'm going to go with Shangela.
Yeah, she is a professional. She was in Las Vegas for a long time. And I remember it was when I was working for a magazine. So I got to go see a preview of her show that she had at one of the casinos.
Nice.
It was this really weird show. It was like very heteronormative. It was strange. this always happens to me. I happen to get in the elevator at the same time that her and her assistant did. And she was in full guiche. And I was just like, like in awe of this beautiful glamazon. And I just like managed to be like... The dumb thing that everybody does, like when you see a celebrity, you say like their catchphrase because that's the only thing you can think of. And so I was like, hallelujah. And she turns to me. She's like, well, you got to do better than that, honey. Say it with me. She's like, hallelujah. And I'm like, oh, my God. I can't even talk to you right now. Get out of the elevator. Oh, it was so funny. God,
that's so great. What's yours?
Oh, mine? Oh, I have too many favorites, bitch. I don't know. If I'm being honest, 100%, I would say, I mean, Jujubee is like, she's been my fave for a long time. But I spend a lot of time, right now, I spend a lot of time with James Mansfield on his YouTube channel. So I think... James Mansfield is one of the most underrated queens from Drag Race.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I also am obsessed with, right now, Trixie and Katya, of course, but I'm obsessed with Bob the Drag Queen. Bob is just so smart. I love Bob. And then...
Super inteligente.
Super, super, super inteligente. And I'm going to choose 3 just because... Whatever, it's my fucking
you
show.
Have to. Yes,
it's my fucking show. let me see who else. There's so many. Oh my God, rest in peace to Lady Red Couture. She passed away this week or earlier in late July. She passed away. So an icon. She's so nice. I think I met her at DragCon. I think that's where it was. Anyway, she was a legend. Let me think. Who else is my favorite that I live when I see them, and I love them so much? I have to say, my next favorite is probably Alaska. You know, it's
yeah,
like between Katya and Alaska. Yeah, like mm-hmm. Katya and Alaska. I mean, if we're not talking Drag Race girls, I love the old school queens like Jackie Beat. Oh my God, I fucking love Jackie Beat. I love Roz Dress for Less, and I love I love Coco Peru. Like all those white queens, I love them. but I used to follow Darcelle from Orlando. I think her name is Darcelle Stevens. Shout out to Darcelle and the Parliament House. All those queens over there, they're also great. Okay. See, I have too many favorites. I couldn't choose one. Sorry. Okay. Oh my God, Miss Toto. Okay. I gotta stop. Jupiter Velvet. I'm thinking about Florida queens now. Okay. Okay, here we go. Latinx singer. Who's your favorite Latinx singer?
Rosalia. Oh wait, she's not Latina.
Bitch, you better be. Was that a joke? Because it didn't come off as a joke, and I'm very upset.
Of course, it came out as a joke.
Well, I can't tell.
I acknowledge her problematic ass. It doesn't mean
okay,
I don't like
that's
her
not
music.
The question. Who's your favorite Latinx singer?
You know, thinking about this, hay muchas bandas. There's a lot of bands that I can name. But a singer of all time. I'm going to go with Julieta Venegas. She's been with me for a lot of things. And like, she is one of the last survivors of the 90s rock en español. And she still does relevant shit. She is, I don't know, I really, really like her. And every time she comes out with something, like, I'm there. And she's, even though like, she doesn't produce the bops that she used to produce back in the day, but she's still creating beautiful production. So I'm going to go with Julieta Venegas.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, man. My favorite Latinx singer would have to be... Oh, gosh. This is a hard one. These are actually really hard questions when you just have to choose one.
Charo. Oh, wait. She's not.
She's not.
Maybe... Maria Conchita Alonso.
Isn't she a novela person?
She was in novelas, yeah. Era la que cantaba una noche de copas, una noche loca.
Oh my gosh, my favorite Latinx singer. Oh my God, this is really hard for me. Rocío Dúrcal is like
española también.
Yeah, she's the Rosalía of the old days.
Right.
I'm going to say Celia Cruz. I love her. Okay.
Yes.
Latinx celebrity crush.
Ooh.
Who is yours?
I don't have one right now. I mean, back in the day, maybe Gael, pero like, I don't know. I don't know. I have to think about that one. How about you?
Oh, if I'm being honest, right now, probably my Latinx crush is this gentleman named Mr. Freaky from bylatinmen.com. Just Google it. Okay.
Pues sí, güey, para que andar con pendejadas.
He's my favorite right now. Who's yours?
I told you, I have to think about it because I don't know.
Gael Garcia. Okay, that sure. Sounds about right for you. Okay, fotos y recuerdos. What is your favorite toy as a child?
Bright light, hands down.
Oh, wow. Damn, fancy. You guys could afford that? That's nice.
My sister got me another one for Christmas. Oh,
no es cierto. So back in the day, they used to sell dominoes that you can put them in a line. And just like... It will come with, ya venían así in like a little track that you could just like flip and they will be all standing up. And then you just make like very complicated patterns and just like hope that they all like fall in a domino effect. But I had a set of glow in the dark dominoes. So I will set them up and then turn off the light and then they will glow in. It never worked, right? Pero, like, la intención ahí estaba. That was my favorite toy.
Yeah, I think I didn't really have that many toys. I think I had, all I can remember is I had this, like, green plastic truck that I would play with sometimes. And then I had a frog stuffed animal for a little bit that I really liked. And then, but my favorite thing was like coloring books. I remember when I had a coloring book, I was happy. So I'll say, I think coloring books. Okay, I had one from, remember that TV show Doug?
Nope.
There was this TV show called Doug where it was this like really sensitive white boy with a really big nose. And he had a dog that like had a better personality than him. And he would journal every day. Like he was really in touch with his feelings. And he's like, dear journal, today. It was a very cute show that was on Nickelodeon, and then Disney bought it. And so they continued it on, like, when we were in middle school, probably. But I remember, oh, my gosh, one of my tías bought me this huge Doug coloring book. And I love Doug so much that I remember coloring it really slow because I was like, I want this coloring book to last me all summer. Because I didn't want to, you know, you just don't want it to end. Kind of like when you save the last bite of your food, that's like the best bite, you know, people that
right,
do that.
Right, right.
It was like, I'm going to savor every line that I color in this book. And then I finished it, and like, I think my grandma threw it away. She's like, you finished it. Get it out of here. No me gusta el tiradero. Okay, so what did you want to be when you were little?
So two. I wanted to be an archaeologist y elotero.
Damn. Well, you can still be that today. Okay.
when I was asked in, I remember someone when I was asked in kindergarten, ¿qué quieres ser cuando sea grande? Yo, I want to be an elotero. And my teacher was so confused. She was like, why? Why? She's like, and I was like, because yo quiero gritar, elotes, elotes. Like it will make me so happy to hear the elotero come by the house. And mi maestra, of course, had to have a talk with my mom. ¿Sabía usted, señora, que su hijo quiere ser un elotero? And my mom is like, ah! I said, but it's better than mi prima Rocío. Shout out to Rocío and Juárez. When they ask her what she wanted to be when she grew up, she goes, madre soltera. Well, guess what, Mimi?
Isn't she, though?
Huh?
Isn't she, though?
That's a whole nother topic, yes.
Oh, okay. Shout out to Rocío. Okay. Fondest childhood memory.
It's not memory, but memories. When I was in Juarez, there was a theater production in the university in La UACJ. And they had like the students and the professors of theater. They had a group of kids that they coached. And they were like community kids. And I enrolled. And to this day, those 3-4 years of theater with my friends are the happiest years of my life. Like hands down. Aww. So just like rehearsing or you know, like opening your lunch in between rehearsals or doing the exercises. Cause it was just like, we were just playing. So those years were by far my happiest memories I have. What about you?
I think spending time with my cousins, my cousin Eric and Chris, they used to live with their grandma, and they had a lot of toys, so I would love going over there. There were the kids that had like all the Ninja Turtles with the Pizza Mobile and Master Splinter, so we could sit there.
Hijo su madre.
And all me and my cousins, we're all very creative kids, so like we had, you know, like when kids, when you're like 10 or something, like 8. No, we were like 7 and 8, you know. You would spend the whole day like, okay, I'm Donatello, you're Raphael. Okay, Master Splinter, he's going to be in the back. He's not going to come out until after lunch. Okay, so this is what's going to happen. So you construct the whole narrative of what you're going to do on your special like in-home episode of Ninja Turtles that you're doing. And then by the time you actually start to act it out, you're already so bored of, like, planning out what you're going to do that you just, like, give up. And you're like, do you want to play Power Rangers now? You're like, okay. And then you just move on to the next thing.
Oh, my God.
It was so fun to do that. And they also had They had a Sega, and I think they had the Sega Channel. And
Válgame.
They were rich. They weren't. They just like had. I mean, both of the grandma and their moms was. They were working, and they were. I mean, the grandma was just spending all the money on the kids, I think, and the mom. So anyway, my favorite game was the Lion King game when the Lion King came out back in the day.
Pero ¿de qué se trata eso?
The Lion King. You never seen the movie?
No way. El game.
Okay. Just think of the movie and think of the video game, like.
So why you grab a lion and put it up on the edge of a fucking mountain? Like, I don't
get
it.
Yeah, you're Simba. Like, one of the first scenes is you're in fucking, there's a stampede and you have to, like, dodge the wildebeest.
Oh, it's a and fucking then you're in video the elephant. Game. I'm thinking of a board game. I'm like, how the fuck did you play that?
What the fuck? The hardest part was, though, which is backwards, you know, that I Can't Wait to Be King, the Mighty King, that song.
Simone.
That's like really fun, like gay Broadway sequence in the movie.
Uh-huh.
It's the hardest fucking level in the game because you're on an ostrich and there's trees with monkeys in them and you have to like ride on this ostrich and then jump through the trees and then not get hit by a monk. It's so much. It's
Jesus
so much.
Christ.
Yeah, it was very stressful, but I love those times and I'll never forget those times. I love my cousins very much. I haven't talked to them in months now, years, some of them. And I'm very nostalgic about those times because it's something that a lot of my white friends, for example, never could relate to with me, like how tight-knit like primos hermanos are in like a Latinx community, because there was like 12 of us, you know?
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
And we're all around the same age. And when we got together, it was like...
Desmadre.
Oh, puro pinche desmadre. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And I'll never forget the summer where we were super into Batman. So, you know, like things like that where like everybody's like into the same thing. And like, and then once it got to Pokemon, they lost me. And I was like, I'm out of here, nerds. I'm going to go watch. I'm peace out. I'm going to go watch Oprah. I don't know what the fuck you guys are doing
Bye,
now.
Felipas.
Bye. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Fondest memory of visiting family abroad. Oh,
okay, assuming that we visited family abroad. No.
She knows that your Rosalia ass is very privileged, so go ahead.
Bajale. I don't think. So ever since I was a kid, I wanted to go to Mexico City, like, because las novelas, you know? Like, that's all mm-hmm. I saw in the novelas. And always wanted to go. That's the thing. Like, when you live in Mexico, right now it's completely different, but back in the day, that was the only notion you had of the country. It was Mexico City and the rest of the country. So every single television show that we will watch, because the televisoras are in Mexico City, they're very Mexico-centric, Mexico City-centric. So I will have ideas of... I already knew what Chapultepec was. I already knew what Papalote Museo del Niño was. I already knew what Zócalo was, even though I never went there. And because ever since, I'm going to say fifth grade, I've been obsessed with history. I remember that we played a game in elementary school that by the end of the day, the professor will ask us questions about history and then you will advance because he actually labels. This is so fucked up now that I think about it. Label cada banca. And there were like 36 of them. So you can be number one or you can be number 36. So I was always fighting to be on the top five, but that's because the questions were about history. So I was always studying a lot about the history of Mexico so I could advance to the first one. And of course, history, like everything else, it's so Mexico City centric. The idea is that it's basically because the biggest empire in Mexico was Mexico City. So when after the independence, that's where the seat of the government was. And that's where it will remain because that's how you attach yourself to the ideals and the legacies of a fucking empire. So since then, everything is about Mexico City. Las telenovelas, Chabelo, which I will watch every fucking Sunday. Like, siempre en Domingos, you were laughing. Pati Chapoy, like, all that shit was all about celebrities out and about in Mexico City and novelas in Mexico City. So I wanted to go. And we had an uncle. It wasn't an uncle. It was like el hijo adoptivo. No adoptivo. El hijo de una tía. But it wasn't really her hijo. It was like el hijo de su esposo. Something like that. He's like como un familiar bien retirado. He lived in Juarez for a couple years, but during 3 months, he lived with us. So I got so, so, so attached to him that he became como mi hermano mayor. And then he moved to Mexico City, and I remember being super sad. So for like 6 or 7 years, like, that's all I wanted. Just go visit mi tío Raúl, you know, even though he wasn't mi tío, no mi primo. Mi tío Raúl in Mexico City, and I finally did. Like, I saved money, and my parents gave me money, and, like, other family members helped me, too, and I finally was able to do it, and I did it with my cousins, and I just remember when I saw him, like, I just started crying. Like, it was, like, after 6 or 7 years of not being able to see him, and because I have sisters, right? I, like, this was, like, a male older figure that I really got attached to, and I mean to this day he was he's mi padrino de graduación and for everything, and I'm actually more attached to him than like la mitad de mis familiares on both sides of my family. So I think it was that arriving to Mexico City after years of wanting to both see the city and also see my uncle. ¿Y tú?
I think the first time I went to Durango, to where my Mexican side of the family's from, I think I was 7. And I remember I had like 2 different personalities porque mi familia mexicana, I was very spoiled, you know, with them. And so I would act more like a baby around them because that's how they treated me, which is so interesting now that I think back at it, like how your kids actually act like you treat them. And so, which drives me crazy, like when moms talk to their kids like they're like dogs, like, "Ay, me, 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 me." I'm like, you know that's why your kid talks like that, because you talk to them like that.
So but, we have a cousin in Juarez, and he always talks to the kids like this. "Oh, yongi, songi, songi."
Oh my God, people are gonna think they're racist. Okay, so
songi,
stop. So, my mom, you know, my mom is like, she's talked to me like I was an adult since I was like 2 years old. You
in
know?
The wound.
In the wound. Damn. Freudian slip. So,
in the wound. Órale, cabrón, limpia su cuarto en cuanto salgas.
For real. I'll never forget when I think I was like 8 years old and my mom's like, "Justin, ven para acá." I'm like, "Okay, mira. Like, go to the washing machine." I'm like, "Okay." She's like, "Okay, reach in. Can you reach the toalla at the bottom of the washing machine?" I was like, "Yeah, I can reach it. Look." "Oh, wow, you're so tall. Okay, great. Now you can do your own laundry." And she's like, "Here's like, this is for color, permanent press. This is this, this is that." And I'm like, "What?" And from that day forward, she never did my laundry. I had to do my own laundry.
Oh, damn.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
But I was like, she raised me to be a very independent person from a very young age, but I knew that when I went to my grandma's house, I could just be like, "I don't know how to do anything," and she would do everything for me, you know? And so, wow. So there's still adults that do that, which is very interesting to me. But, you know, some of us never grow up. The first time I went to Mexico, my family's like, "Oh, I don't know how Justin's going to do in Mexico because, you know, Justin's, you know, he's not the brightest kid and es bien torpe que no sé qué." You know, they would say all this shit. Like, I couldn't hear them talking. So they already gave me a complex. They thought because es un pueblo sin calles, like, it's literally, you know, it's a pueblito that has, like, dirt roads and rocks everywhere, that I was going to be, like, right, tripping everywhere and, like, just, like, crying because I was used to, like, sidewalks and air conditioning. And I'm like, "Bitch, you don't even know where you don't even know." I was raised on 28th Street in the east side, okay? And when I got to Carreras, to this little pueblo, I was living. I was thriving. I was, like, I was just, like, overjoyed because I was like, I felt like it was safe enough for me to just wander this village as a kid. And I was like, I can just go to the store. I can just go to El Corral. I can go to the little church, go like sneak under the tables at the Villar, you know, like they don't care in Mexico in those little pueblos, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, just, I love to walk around and explore. So I was just exploring and just like, you know, like playing with all these animals. And that's when I met for the first time my great grandpa Jose Leon. And he was like, to me, he was like 10 feet tall. He was really tall, but he was probably like 6'2", 6'3". But to you know, I was 7, so he looked
35 feet tall.
He looked like a fuck. Yeah, he looked like a ogre. He looked like Hagrid. Okay, but he was. Imagine really Hagrid, like really, really, really skinny. My grandpa didn't have any facial hair either. He didn't look. He looked like. Did you ever watch the Addams Family?
Yes.
The butler that's the Frankenstein character.
My God, yes.
That's my grandpa looked like that. His teeth were rotting because remember he's too masculine to even brush his teeth.
Right.
And then he had huge ears and I loved my grandpa so much and cuz he would let me help him cuz he was so old at that point. So like in the morning I would get out of my grandma's house, run to my great grandpa and great grandma's house. And, like, help him with feeding the chickens, feeding the horses. Like, I would do all that with him every morning for, like, 2 weeks. That was, like, my favorite part of the day. And then my family was all shook. They're like, ay, qué trabajador, mi niño, la, la, la. And I'm like, yeah, you fucking hoes are babying me, trying to still, you know, like, coddle me as a 7-year-old. And I'm over here, like, fully doing people's taxes. Qué pendejos. Okay. I think we have just. Oh my God, that was one email.
That was one email. It's like this. My student email just went through the whole thing.
Okay, wait. But let's just do this next one really quick. We have time. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Lo leo yo.
Dale.
This is from Meli. A message for mi gente. Trigger warning, description of violent imagery. Ay, cabrón, let's do this. Okay, I've been thinking a lot on what to say and how to post this, and so hopefully the following makes sense. In 1980, a civil war broke out in my family's home country, El Salvador. I learned so much about my country's history, not through my family, but through my privileged education at a Jesuit institution. This war was between the impoverished people of El Salvador versus their corrupt government. During my senior year in college, I immersed and educated myself more in my culture through a program called Romero House, where I had the opportunity to visit many significant sites and meet the people involved in this war. Slowly, as I began educating myself on the events leading up to this war, those involved, the injustices, the gentes were fighting, and everything else about it, frustration began to build inside me. Why hadn't my family taught me this history? Why hadn't they fought for justice? Why were they silent? Part of me understands the trauma and fear that comes with the war. And if you don't know anything about the civil war in El Salvador, it was gruesome.
While in El Salvador with Romero House, we visited the University of Central America. During one conversation, my group and I were welcomed into a classroom and shown photos, evidence of the horrific murders of Jesuit priests on campus that happened during the war. While taking in these images, my aunt, who was also visiting El Salvador at the time, came in to see me and the group. I remember her walking around, unbothered by what we were seeing, and then taking pictures, trying to make a smile and capture a good moment. But that was not a good moment. It was one that I forever will remember because the images I saw of innocent bodies lying in a pool of their own blood with their brains literally shot out. There were people who were fighting to educate and protect the gente of El Salvador.
And now we are here. Today I'm witnessing and seeing images of black men and women being murdered and abused in our streets. I'm hearing the stories. I'm reading the history. I've been fortunate enough to not have to experience police brutality, but I have experienced discrimination in many forms. My family may not have spoken up during their war, but I will in mine. I choose not to be silenced. I take pride in my family's history and where we come from. But for many of my Latinx friends, we share similar stories of our passive and racist families.
I grew up surrounded by colorism and discreet, and that's in quotes, racism. I was also told que no me... ¿Cómo se dice eso?
Que no me asolé tanto.
Oh, God. Okay. I was also told que no me asolé tanto, not to be in the sun too much, because I looked better, not too negrita. I was always taught that if it doesn't affect me directly, don't get involved. But I look at my country today and think how I can get involved. How am I not angry or sad?
I can see the racism and passiveness comes from ignorance for most of my life. I haven't spoken up to the comments I've heard and witnessed, which doesn't make me any better. We can't continue to be passive. I'm choosing to educate my family, my friends, neighbors on what is happening and why. Don't let microaggressions pass. Don't let racism and humor go by unnoticed. Speak up because it's time. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Meli. Muchísimas gracias, Meli, for that email.
Very powerful email. Thank you for that message. And you know what? Kenya and I actually talked about it last month on the show when we were saying that our Central American families, or I think I was saying, like, the narrative a lot in the United States is like, oh, these poor people came here to build a better life, and now they're trying their best at the American dream, when really we were in a very violent situation, and we had to seek asylum in the 80s, you know, and a lot of Central Americans came here and they thought it was going to be better. And then, es la misma cosa aquí, you know. And
como dice, aquí también está jodido, dice.
Así dijo, aquí también está jodido. So, it's this thing that my exact fucking sentiment from my Guatemalan family, if it doesn't involve you, keep your nose out of it, which is like, that's not a very Christian thing to do, but, you know, people pick and choose, I guess. And it's like,
and I think it comes from, go ahead.
I understand, because like, if you saw that violence firsthand, which I know a lot of my family did, like, that's so traumatic that they don't want to, you know, we're not taught to process our feelings. And I actually have been listening to a lot of podcasts about different ideas, like the idea of mourning somebody and the idea of closure, and how closure is actually a myth. You can't fully let something go. It's part of your past, you know? And so, but if you never even deal with it and like, think about what happened, and you just keep shoving that trauma down, 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 it really affects you, and it affects your health, like physically, yeah, by doing that, you know? So to see this violence on television right now, I will tell you, firsthand experience, a lot of my Guatemalan family just ignores it because it's too painful for them, because they've never dealt with their own pain. I've had a serious conversation with some family members recently where I'm like, you guys can't keep ignoring this. And I let them know, like, I know why you're ignoring it, because I know our past and I know we've been through a lot. And it's a lot for us to handle when we haven't even dealt with our own, how we've been treated by this country, you know?
And sometimes, like, communities are conditioned to ignore. That's how the system's supposed to work, where, yeah, like, you are trained to be quiet to save your life. Then you just continue those patterns and you don't realize how much more of that violence that you were protecting yourself and your family from, you're continuing by being silent, you know?
Exactly, exactly. So it's a great message. It's time. We're the generation right now that are going to break that, hopefully. And I keep mentioning it, but, you know, I've been doing a little bit of work here in Vegas regarding, like, social change and racial justice. And it actually is very counterintuitive. Like, for me, it's like counter physically. Like, my body has a reaction when I am outspoken, you know, because right, my whole life I've been trained to just be quiet and don't say anything.
Calladito, and so, se ve mejor.
Like, I was literally on a Zoom call the other day and I was just telling the truth. I was just talking about white supremacy to all these white people, and my voice started shaking because it's scary. I've never I mean, this show is different. This is me and you and our listeners who we love and we trust because
right.
obviously we're like 50 minutes in and you're still listening, but like, so we created this space. But when I'm in spaces that I don't know how people are going to react to me, it's scary to me, you know, because, and also being a part of the church, since, you know, that's another way to control us, you know, like respect your elders, be quiet, turn the other cheek, don't say anything, you know, you just work hard and you'll get what you want. You know, that's bullshit. All that's fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
There's so many millionaires out there that are fucking lazy shits and they're just, they've been set up to succeed. Whatever. I'm not going to go there, but I'm just saying, again, give your family some grace because remember they went through all this trauma, but at the same time, acknowledge it. Like, hey, I know our family went through a lot, so you're ignoring this, but I'm not, just let them know. Like, I can't ignore it. And thanks to your hard work, mom. Thanks to your hard work, dad. Tías, tíos, grandma, grandpa, whoever you have. Thanks to your hard work, I can be outspoken about these things because you gave me the privilege to do that.
And correct. That's
powerful.
And because of all that work that they put onto your privilege, you have in a way a responsibility to be patient because this is not one conversation, you know? One conversation because we all had it. We've all had it. Que yeah. un tío o alguien dice una pendejada y se enojas y gritas y sales storm out y se acabó. Mm-mm. Like this sometimes these are just like it took us years through education, through conversations, through like a lot of different things, through social media, even the privilege of basically this generation that is born with social media, which is not a thing, you know? Just like it took years, basically a generation for everybody to be like, duh, yeah, it's going to take a long time with family. And you have to be patient and you have to give the benefit of the doubt because if you don't give them the benefit of the doubt, nobody else will. You know what I mean? So it is important to know that it's an uphill battle and it takes a long, long time. And the most important thing is not to give up, you know, and there's ways to do it. And you have to gauge it. You have to gauge when, how, and where to have these types of conversations, you know? And more than anything, learn how to ask them questions, which we talked about before. As opposed to pointing the finger at them, you can be like, but why do you say that? Who told you that? You know what I mean? And I think that the fact that you are going to have them question themselves, it's a lot more powerful and more useful than pointing the finger. Because the second we do that, especially when it's our families, because it becomes personal, boom. Ya valió vergas, güey. Ya valió madres, and the conversation is not going to go anywhere. And that's something I learned from you. Just like, I said, wait, but why did you say that, you know? And I know we do have physical reactions to these things, and I know it's very complicated sometimes. So learning to have the conversations is probably the first and most complicated step. And once you do that, it should get better and better and better, you know? So good luck, and shout out to you for not staying silent, and everybody needs to say something. And this is important because I was reminded of this. Ana Lu Lopez, who was in one of her episodes, she sent me a video of one of the statues of Columbus being toppled. And it's everywhere. It's statues, is this and that. And I know that you talked about how it's sometimes it's people showing off, saying, yeah, we understand, so we're going to do this little gesture for you. Nomás para que se queden callados, you know? Mm-hmm. But because the symbols and the signifiers and the signals of white supremacy are embedded in everything. We were in the Mexican side of town just yesterday, like a truly, fully Mexican side of town, and all the streets were like Polish and German. And we understand that the history of those neighborhoods has changed. The face of those neighborhoods has changed. But it's different now. And there was nothing around us that will tell us that this was a Latino neighborhood. Because this white history, it's so alive and thriving everywhere in our cities, you know? So I'm saying this because if a name of a street changes, if a statue is la tumba or something, if slowly, little by little, we start getting rid of all the signifiers of white supremacy, just like they may seem small gestures, when you put them all together, they're gonna create a change. The same thing with you and your family. You know, a little conversation mm-hmm. can have a huge repercussions even for future generations. So once again, thank you so much for that email.
All right. Well, we're gone a little long, so I think we're going to skip recommendations, if that's okay, Babs.
That's good.
Okay. Thank you so much, everybody, for sending your letters. Meli, again, thank you. We're almost through them all, you guys. I'm so happy that we got to get through all the letters. We're in 2020 now. My inbox is current, which is great. So we have plenty of emails for the next few episodes, but if you have any questions, again, send them to asklwlpod@gmail.com. You can also send a voicemail. I'll put the phone number and the email in the show notes so you don't have to write it down right now. If you have a moment, please take the time to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. It's the same thing. I don't know why I said that. But wherever you listen to podcasts, I should say, because some other platforms do let you review.
Right.
Please share the podcast with people. And when you review, please leave us 5 stars.
5 estrellas only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And
visibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Emmanuel Ortega and Justin Favela, with production assistance from Maite Sosa. The music you're listening to now is by the wonderful band Balloon.
Woo-hoo.
Or Balloon, depending on how you say it. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Asar hasangasangirangi.
Oh no.